Reckless Dice Podcast. I am Jesse Burke, your host, and this is a post-wrap-up of our Thousand Thrones campaign. We just seconds ago let the world succumb to spider death, and everybody died in the Realm of Chaos because through lack of options. And let's spend a few minutes talking about the Thousand Thrones campaign as a whole. First thoughts.
Thank goodness it's over.
Thank goodness it's over.
Yeah.
So I think this campaign had a lot of problems.
Yeah.
It had a lot of problems. Not some of which were our own doing, some of which I think were the writing. We did our best to follow the campaign as written. Though admittedly near the end we decided to skip the last chapter and a half and truncate it into the finale because we just couldn't handle it anymore.
We're over it.
Like, yeah. So yeah. We did our best to kind of get the full experience in there. Trash day. So this was from my perspective as the GM, this was probably the most railroady adventure I've played. I'm sure you guys felt that. Chris, what are your
thoughts? Railroady, but like, you know, Nate and all of us kind of, we talked about this before about things like the
Sophie, hush. She's supposed to participate.
We've talked about the unwinnable chase scenes and the you know, some of the encounters that were just had to go a certain way, so whatever we did was really inconsequential, and that just, you know, it seems very old. It seems like very ancient sort of approach to role-playing games that isn't done much or at all anymore. Just
yeah, I didn't appreciate a lot of the things that there were leaps of logic in the way that you guys would have to leave a certain city when you're not done or you don't have any reason to travel 100 miles to the next city, but they just assume that you will.
Right.
And I had a lot of trouble with how to handle those kind of things where it's like, okay, well, you guys just follow this guy on this teeny little sliver of evidence you have for hundreds of miles away from where you could otherwise make very logical exploration. A lot of that stuff just permeated through the whole adventure, it felt.
Yeah, I mean, and I think something that happened, this is tougher to get to grips with, but I think something that happened at the very beginning sort of affected the rest of the campaign, which was we all just sort of made whatever characters, right? Like, I specifically made a character that wasn't a combat, you know, murder hobo so that I could play something other than what I've been playing the last couple of games we ran. And, you know, because I've always been sort of the front line fighter guy or whatever.
Yeah.
However that worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a social character, and just the way that that character came about and the way I sort of made him, like, you know, attached to Nate's character in a way just didn't carry through the rest of the campaign. It ended up just being a mess. And then this character...
And like, I wanted to nurture that more, and admittedly I didn't do as much as I could there, but it really felt like the campaign just didn't allow for much exploration into those areas.
Well, honestly, I think right around the time that Leo turned into a mutant and, like, lost his will to live, things got really sour for just, like, in all sorts of directions.
Mm-hmm.
Because Neffin lost his reason to be in the party, and my character got really confused with the whole mutant situation, and we all kind of just went, I think, emotionally separate ways and couldn't find an organic way to come back to one another.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, in that whole scene where everything kind of went sideways, it's like, okay, Leo's tied to a log, stuck in a tent, somebody throws a plague thing in there, you know. And I think that the sort of good cop criminal sidekick was working up to that point, but again, my motivation for, oh, let's go in there and become corrupted by whatever horrible chaos fleas those are in order to save the guy who's basically dragging me around the Empire didn't connect.
Yeah. It doesn't match up with the tension that we had built, the dynamic between our characters.
Right.
So there was no reason, you know, to save him. And then, you know, I guess I could have fabricated something, but to stick with whatever remnants of the character there was.
I mean, to be honest, I actually really enjoyed yes, the dynamic of the group got totally shattered at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that we explored what it was like to have a guy descend into chaos and, like, corruption. Like, that was entertaining. I don't... But again, it was kind of the wrong group to allow them to explore. Like, everybody kind of toyed with corruption and things they shouldn't have. You know, like, right. Edwig's character, or Layla's character, Edwig, had, you know, the some books and spells that were kind of, like, teetering into mm-hmm. dark places. But, you know, we never
developed it, really.
Or yeah, you know, it could have gone a lot different had we known at the beginning what was in store for us. We could have created characters where either individually or the dynamic, collectively, mm-hmm. we could have survived these things.
Well, to be honest, I hadn't read the whole adventure before doing it. All I'd known was the first chapter or two.
Right.
Well, at the end, we were running around with a Nurgle acolyte, cultist of, you know, Nurgle, my character, sorceress of Nurgle, and your character became normal, right? And that was just so dysfunctional, I think. You know, by the end, or even by the midpoint of the campaign,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. you know,
and again, that's kind of where I was headed: is that the decisions at the beginning to play the characters that we played, now knowing where this adventure ultimately ended up, we would have been far better served by playing more dogged, like, servants of the Empire. It's like, why are we out here doing this? Because we're gonna save the Empire, right? It's like, right. we gotta be, you know, Neffen's a self-motivated kind of a criminal character that's like, you know, that would have been fun in a city campaign or something, but getting out here into the world of, you know, chaos and swamps and all this other stuff, it's like, what the hell is he doing out here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like, what it felt like at a certain point is that we didn't have characters who wanted to be heroes.
Right.
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 Well, my character did, but not after he, you know, went off the deep end and lost his humanity, right? So at that point, it's like, that was, how many sessions was that?
It's a 15, long time 20? Ago. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
that was the worst stint of a character I've ever played. I enjoyed none of the last 15 sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rough, you know, and again, if we'd had, like, a soldier of the Empire and a priest and a battle wizard and whatever else, and that was the group that sort of came together to investigate and pursue and whatever else, I think this would have gone a completely different way.
That's even tough, though, to survive mutations and diseases and have these upright people, because as soon as somebody pops a tail, realistically, they should have just been killed by everybody else, right? You've lost your humanity right here.
But maybe if we had something like a Shalion priest or something that could have helped mitigate some of that horrible corruption-y type stuff.
Dude, what is happening?
I know, dude. It's like...
Oh my, it's right in our street.
Really?
Is that an ambulance?
No.
No. What are they? Huh. It's not
the rest. Is it police?
Yeah.
That's not good.
Oh, it's Santa.
Oh my gosh, it's Santa.
Oh, Santa parade. So not a murder.
Oh my gosh.
Not a murder, it was Santa. Jeez. Man, go figure. I was like, gee, that's a hell of a lot of silence.
Yeah, really.
Good lord.
Santa run.
Yeah, well, I'm glad everybody who's listening, if you're still listening after all that, I'm glad you're still here.
Because why not?
Because, you know what, we came... If you've made it to the end of this campaign, you deserve it.
Sophie's going to sing you a song.
We'll go out with bells and whistles.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk a little bit. What do we want to do next? I mean, this thing kind of burned out in a weird sort of flame. So, like, what are we into? What do we want to explore?
What are we into?
I don't know. I want to run something. I feel like I could use a break from the system, but I'll leave it to you guys to, you know, chime in on that. I would just assume run something else, something where you guys can pick it. I don't care. I'll run it, and then... I was just thinking something a little more empowering.
Did we have any requests for stuff that to run? Games to run?
It's been a long time. I remember somebody mentioned Shadow of the Demon Lord, but that's just sort of a light version of this. It's equally pretty dark, and I actually own it and have ran two campaigns of it now. I don't know that I love it. It's got some interesting bits to it, but...
Well... With that and all the dogs, which I'm kind of over.
No, well, we're still talking about stuff. Don't just...
What about you, Layla?
So, I haven't had an opinion about Warhammer for a really long time because I started with the game system and never really questioned the rules or anything until we started playing Kingdom Death recently. And the rules in that game are just so much tighter. And then every time we transition from that game back to the Warhammer system, all of the... Just like the way we roll the dice and the way that the cards are organized, there's no tightness. It feels like a very loose system to me, and I'm kind of tired of it. So, I don't know, I'm just throwing that out there. I guess I'd be open to another system, is all I'm saying. Yeah. Something a little more, I don't know, legit.
Yeah, I don't know, it feels... It's a decent game at its core, and I've been playing Warhammer forever. Mm-hmm. But the dice definitely in this game, over time, prove themselves to be failed. Like, the math behind the game, I think, is broken.
Well, it's like all the slotting on my, witch sheet. I never really use it. I sometimes use it when I feel like it. You know, I can't. It's not something anybody really enforces or, keeps track of. It doesn't benefit any certain things. Going into conservative doesn't really seem to benefit all that much. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, I don't disagree with you guys. I think the rule system for this... I mean, I love the setting, and I'm playing this game for the setting. This rule system and this product, I guess, this edition of the game, has so many bells and whistles and things you're supposed to monitor. We are doing 8%.
Yeah.
Of what we should be actually monitoring in this game.
Because a lot of it became cumbersome. Because
it's so cumbersome, to the point where I can't even play the game anymore.
Yeah.
So we cut out so much of it to the one, because it kind of was conducive for audio podcasting, but dude, it's not fun with all that crap. So, I love Warhammer, but I the rule system I'm tired of.
Yeah.
What about you, Nate? What do you want to do?
Yeah. I like the narrative action. Having played, Blades in the Dark a little more now, it's nice to be able to be competent and not fail at, things that you're even supposed to be good at, I guess I'm a little burnt out on the rule system as well. I love, Warhammer. I love the setting and the feeling of playing in dark and gritty and, being able to run around with a hacked off leg and, other parts.
Well, we have the new Warhammer edition coming out sometime next year. It might be fun to try a different system in the interim, and then come back to Warhammer with the new system and its intro adventures. It's supposed to be, from what I understand, a hybrid between closer to second edition than this edition, which means we would have a tight single book style rule set without all the bits and bobbles of a standard character sheet, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think from just a generic role playing perspective, it'd be nice to start off playing a fledgling hero and be able to be a hero, as opposed to, my guy started off, wealthy and, a noble and ended up, I don't know how I could have gone any lower. And that's kind of a theme, I think. In the last couple of characters I've played, is you start at anything other than in the dirt and you'll end up, in the dirt. And it's not necessarily something I like to play, because in the last couple of games, be it the modules or the way that we do the flow, you're not able to play that knight in shining armor. You're able to play, maybe a wealthy cleric who in session 3 has all his money stolen. And then you're not that anymore. Or, it kind of, you're brought low and humbled and kept there. As a player, I don't necessarily, if that's the kind of character I want to play, I'm into it, but I've done that too much.
Do you think that's a factor of a written adventure or something that would be better, more conducive to a free flow role-playing experience, like a homegrown, organic adventure?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I don't know the cause of that, you know.
Because I don't disagree with you. It seems to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like almost like built into the story that you're supposed to get knocked back down to zero, so it didn't really matter where you started.
Well, kind of, but, you know, I think it was session 8 that my, you know, pistolier lost his, you know, weapons and, you know, never had anything back, and we're on session 20-something?
2.
So, you know, that is the equivalent of Edwig not being able to cast spells.
Yeah.
And losing all of her magic.
Yeah.
And Neffin having his tongue cut out.
Right.
Right? So if my guy was supposed to do that, and I had a stack of cards that let me do that,
mm-hmm.
to have that taken away from my character as a player stinks. Yeah. I rolled with it, and I, you know, I reveled in the dirt and the slime and, you know, the mutations and everything. But, you know, I didn't necessarily enjoy it. I don't know, back to your question, Jesse, I don't know if that's Warhammer, if it's supposed to do that, or if that's just the way that things played out.
Well, I mean, I kind of feel like when you have things taken away from you as a player, it's really up to you to decide if you want to get those things back or not, or replace them with something new. They shouldn't be necessarily given by the GM to, mm-hmm. you know, like if you had your pistol stolen or taken away because you were under arrest and...
Yeah.
Storyline of like
that's tough because a brace of pistols is like 10 gold.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, it was a big loss.
And a wheelbarrow was 4 gold. So
well,
there was
midway,
constant pressure. That
midway
said,
through the
you know,
midway
right?
through well, the, midway through we were doing a second edition adventure, up converted to third edition, and the price sheets we were using was that of third edition, but the compensation you were getting was that of second edition, and I couldn't find a good fast rule to convert. So eventually I just threw it in the air and just said, I'm just going to use the money from this edition. And they were handing it out like candy. So money was pointless in this game, I felt. All you're doing is they're giving you money so you can afford to travel from one place they told you to go to the next with a couple pieces to spare.
That's so interesting that it from the GM side of the chair, it feels that way. But from the player side, knowing, you know, what the economy is supposed to cost is, I don't think at ever any point I had 10 gold. You know, I think the one point I did, we spent 4 of it on a wheelbarrow, which we...
yeah, 4 on a wheelbarrow was a lot.
Yeah,
which we never retrieved.
That maybe
right?
was a weird mistake, you know, like, they don't have a cost for a wheelbarrow easily pulled up, so I just kind of, like, went with it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I'm maybe misreading the bones or not trying hard enough there, but, you know, we made a couple of attempts, and, you know, so just go with it.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it was a really hard one to GM. I mean, I was trying to play both what the story wanted you to do, but rarely were you in a place long enough for any relationships to form, because it was an adventure of traveling across the empire and continually going to strange places. So it didn't really matter the people you met. You just needed them for that one day until you could move on to the next town.
Yeah.
Well, which like hampered Neffin's abilities.
Well, but I do recall like there was a time where I just tried to steal pistols for Nate.
Yeah.
I would have just let that happen, because to me it's window dressing. It's like his character is useless without his guns, so just give him his guns.
Well, you bring up something that I was struggling with too, and I agree with you. I probably should have. Like, in this adventure, at certain times the adventure, it wants you to drill down and be really specific on what everybody's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, let's go shopping, let's go explore this room, let's, like, you know, lift up boards and sift through books. And the very next scene, it has you, like, generalizing huge strokes of story. And that shift back and forth between the level of detail or scope
mm-hmm.
was jarring, and I was having a hard time until about midway through, where I kind of figured out that that's how it was going to work, of, like, how much to say what happened and how much giving you guys control of where to go. And so that was pretty difficult, actually. And I think that was a casualty of that concept.
Yeah.
Well, so what does everybody feel like playing? Not necessarily the system, but what do you want to do?
Well, yeah, the so what of, you know...
We've been asked to play Star Wars.
The complaining is more, you know, where you're
Chris
able to maybe be a little more heroic.
I do.
That's similar to this one, though, isn't it?
It is, but with...
Is there as much stuff?
No, not as much. It's and it uses
dice.
Remedied versions of those dice. So the math was rebalanced in different ways, but the concepts are the same, right? Boon dice and skill dice and setback, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I have that. So I do have Star Wars. I could run that.
Is there still action cards and stuff?
There are cards only if you want them. So they're not part of the game, but if you like having cards for your abilities, you can order them online as like a print on demand.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So they don't like sell them like in stores. Some places buy and stock them just for people that want them or whatever, but they were all released as like print on demand products. So if you want a set of cards because you like having cards, you can, and otherwise you can just have your character sheet and write stuff down on the slots where what talent do I have.
Pen and paper.
But it's nice because if you do have a talent, you could have the card for it and have it sitting in front of you with the rule on it. So they're nice.
Okay.
I've played the game. I'm actually playing it right now with a different group. So I've got a pilot character, so I'm getting to experience it from the player side of things. And, you know, I could absolutely run that. I could run any number of things. Blades in the Dark, something Nate mentioned. I'm running for a group that Nate and a couple other guys are playing in. I'm actually enjoying that immensely. There are similar types of systems, right, where it puts most of the rolling action on the players and not the GM.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting mechanic.
So, and I told Nate about this a while ago, Numenera was a game that I was thinking about running, and it's a game that I previously looked at and then sort of didn't quite grok it. I didn't really get how it was supposed to work, honestly, from all the years I've run games. It felt weird, but now that I've run Blades in the Dark, I totally get it. And so it's like I'm ready to go back and check it out. But that's kind of its own thing. It's kind of weird. Don't necessarily know that anybody has to have
it. Is it like a fantasy setting? Is it sci-fi?
It's
hard to say.
It's both, because what it is it takes place on Earth a billion years in the future.
Huh.
So Earth has literally risen and fallen 8 times. Like humanity has somehow completely like risen to its peak and then destroyed itself or whatever. So all of these things have risen and fallen 8 times, and then the current game is taking place in like a medieval level society that is surrounded by an entirely engineered planet where things from prior eras are still around. Like robots that were built so well that they're still walking around. And time travel was made possible during one era, so there might be like time anomalies. And there, basically, the way that the setting works is it enables anything to happen. You mm-hmm. can kind of do anything. And magic is crazy stuff, like you're not really a wizard. It's that there's like clouds of nanites in the air that have been left around forever, and maybe you were born with a chip in your head that allows you to control them so you can light things on fire like a wizard. Mm-hmm. And people think you're a wizard, but you kind of secretly know that you're really just talking with the technology in the air. So it's a weird little system, but it allows for a lot of interesting characters, and it puts all the rolling on the players. The GM doesn't do anything. So if you get attacked, you roll a defense. If you attack, you roll an attack. Mm-hmm. And the GM just narrates the action and then does interesting things called intrusions, where when you want to complicate the matter, the GM does the intrusion, and that's how the players get experience. You either take the intrusion and get the experience, or you pay an experience and say, no, I don't want that to happen to me.
Interesting.
Oh, that could be interesting.
Yeah. And it's got printed adventures, so if you wanted to explore printed material, that's possible, but it's also something that would be fairly simple to just craft your own or let the players sort of decide the direction of the game.
Are they still releasing material on it?
Oh, it's just finished a Kickstarter for a quote-unquote second edition. It's not a change in the rules. They're splitting it from one book into two books, and they're releasing a GM book and a player book. The rules are all the same, so you can actually continue to use the original player book.
Well, how about this as our first decision? Do we want to play a printed adventure or a homegrown adventure that Chris would GM?
And I can do that for either, right? Because for Star Wars, I have Onslaught at Arda, which is a printed book adventure, or I could write something.
We haven't done a... one that we've written, have we?
Not since the last adventure that we did with the other group.
Yeah, that was like ages ago, so that could be fun.
That people really liked that one as well.
Mm-hmm. I'd be down.
Which one was that?
That one was Mike. What was it with called? Michael.
Yeah, Michael Wilson.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was called.
I don't. There it works. That's all I
remember. There it works. It's a cool map, and like he did a nice job with that. He got a lot of compliments on that.
What? That's not enough for you guys. Orcs.
Some buried but not forgotten. Was
that
the name of it?
That sounds familiar.
Pretty sure. Yeah, I think that'd be fun. All right. Well, any other topics you want to cover on our summary of this campaign before we kind of put it to death and pretend we never. Pretend we never did it.
No.
If you're thinking about running it as a GM and as a group of players, yeah, I'd recommend having a conversation. Maybe just tell
about this.
No, the thousand thrones. Yeah, maybe just set the tone because some modules go certain places, right? And
yeah,
I think
best served by Heroes of the Empire.
Yeah, or something that can survive a Nurgle based 9-chapter adventure.
Yeah, I would say it is not necessary. Okay, yeah. Getting back to the analysis of the way this thing was written, it bit off way more than it could chew. This campaign, I think.
Yeah.
I think it really wanted to tell a really neat story about vampire prophecies and about this kid. I love the concept of this kid with the with this mutation that is like, to be perfectly frank, that's what it was. He was a kid with a mutation.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I guess, do you guys want to know the actual story of like what was happening?
Yeah, I do.
So spoilers for any... This is the last thing we talked about for the episode. So if you don't want spoilers, you can turn it off now. So Carl's born, has this power. Okay, shift gears for a second. Lady with black hair, the witch, was a chaos champion, led the siege of Prague. Didn't go well. She got mortally wounded, fled into the hills, crawled into this cave, and essentially has been holed up there trying to... She died, but her spirit's still there, and she's trying to become mortal again so she can come out and be a kick-ass chaos champion again. So in order to become mortal again, she also, while she's there, has these like powers that she can go into people's dreams and like influence them in their dreams and kind of lure them to her. So that's what she's been doing to Carl. She learned about Carl through a series of events.
Of Kislev.
Yeah, so she's kind of luring Carl to him because she wants to use that power as part of her thing. So she wants to infuse herself into Carl.
At what point was all of that going to be explained? Because none of that was explained.
Well, I got the Carl birthing part. Like, that he was born mutant from the whole thing at the beginning.
The background on the witch is, like, the most interesting part.
Well, the background on the witch comes, I can only assume, partly during Chapter 9, maybe. I don't know, we didn't end up reading it. Or through some kind of monologue that she could have done at the end, which didn't really happen.
Because she poofed and was gone.
Yeah, well, So then, if that's not enough... The whole Thousand Throne thing is a prophecy that the vampires have. It's the way that the Thousand Throne's prophecy is that the vampires will ultimately ascend and take over the world and be the leading race, and like humanity will be subservient to them, and there will be a fixed number of vampires who actually like pass through into this new world and become immortal and everything. So each of the different vampire families that we were dealing with each had a different vision of how those prophecies would get fulfilled. And so that's a vampire thing. The Black Witch was influencing all the vampires to think that the boy was an integral part of that prophecy, so that they would capture that boy and bring it to her.
Mm-hmm.
Also, all those vampires would come to this place and she would siphon their immortal lives. So she would be a Carl infused super immortal chaos ass kicker. Then that was her end goal. Now the cool part, which I forgot to do, which was kind of something I was going to add, which is like a little bonus thing, was that there's one little paragraph of like, if you really want to throw things for a wrench, like here's a cool idea. And it's like, well, actually Nagash, who's been dead for a while but really wants to come back, is using the Black Witch to use everybody else, to use Carl, to be able to fulfill the prophecies to resurrect himself.
Oh boy.
So that's the kind of crap I had to deal with this silly thing. It's like, it's cool, but it's so convoluted.
Yeah, just a little bit.
That it was not entertaining to like try and piece out. And those prophecies, that was the first time I was able to say that without stumbling. I did not understand how those stupid prophecies worked. And it's in the first chapter of the book, and it's like, it's fucking complicated. I have like five or six vampire families, each with their own versions, and it just tells you straight up what each of their versions of the story is, and I'm right. Like, dude, I'm already my mind.
And see, the big challenge, or not challenge, the thing that I would look at that and go, that's terrible writing, is that you're the only one that gets to enjoy it.
Yes. There's so much in this book.
Right? It's like, look at all this amazing story. Guys, let's play this game. And we're all experiencing it from the other side going, yeah, why were these vampires here again?
Right. Well, that's just it. Like, how... Except for
I
just,
still
like,
can't figure out, like, why.
Except for just basic, like... exposition, how do you communicate some of that? Like, you just, I can't just have the villain be like, all right, monologue time, guys, this is why you're here.
Yeah.
Like, it's so boring to do that, but like, you have to, otherwise the players never know it. I mean, I struggled with this one. I appreciate anybody who's still listening to this podcast at this point. That was a tough one, man. Oh my goodness.
We'll be better.
Yeah. Chris, I'll take a break and play a character for a while. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. We'll start up again in the new year with a new game. We'll surprise you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.